Okay. Good morning. Okay, fine. So I thought this week we were going to talk a little bit about the Parsha, obviously Parshas Noach. And in this week we read about Noach and his generation, how the world was, you know, filled with violence and they were immersed in terrible sins, lying, fraud, theft, etc. You name it, they were all involved with it. And so Hashem decides that he has to, you know, cleanse the world of these things, rid of the world of these things, and he brings a mabul, a great flood. But before he tells the righteous Noach that he should go and go build this teva, an ark, and actually takes Noach 120 years to build the teva. And once it's complete, Hashem tells Noach to take 7 pairs of the kosher animals, of the tahar animals, and 2 of the non-kosher animals, and to go into the teva, where it then rains for 40 days and 40 nights. Okay, so what happens at the end? Perek Ches, Pasuk Aleph. Vayizkor Elokim es Noach, ve'eskol hachaya, ve'eskol habehema asher ito, bateva, vayavor Elokim ruach ala aretz, vayishoku hamayim. And Hashem remembers Noach, and he remembers all the animals and all the cattle that were with him in the ark, in the teva. And Hashem causes the wind to pass over the earth, and the water subsides. Then later on, Pasuk Vav, Vayhi Mikit Arba'im Yom, Vayiftach Noach Es Chalon HaTeva Asher Asa. So it's the end of 40 days, and Noach opens the window of the Teva. Vayishlach Es Ha'orei, Vayetze Yatzo, Yashov Ad, Yevoshet Hamayim, Me'al Aretz. Then what does he do? He sends out the raven, but what does the raven do? It basically flies back and forth, until the waters begin to dry up. And then the next pasuk, Vayishlach es hayona meito leros hakalu hamayim me'al pnei ha'adama. V'lo matza hayona manoach l'kaf raglav atashav elav el ha'teva ki mayim al pnei kol ha'aretz vayishlach yado vayikacha vayivei ota elav el ha'teva. And so then what does Noach do? He sends out the dove, and the purpose of sending the dove is to see if the water had dried up. The water had abated from the surface of the ground. And then the dove, what happens? The dove goes out and it can't find a resting place. It can't find a place to put its foot down because obviously there's still a lot of water on the earth. And so therefore, what does Noach do? He stretches out his arm and he takes the dove back into the teva. And then the story continues. Noach waits 7 days and he sends out the dove again. And this time the dove comes back with an olive branch. And then he waits another 7 days and he sends out the dove again. And this time the dove does not come back anymore. Obviously, you know, giving Noah the message that now it is okay to go out and once again inhabit the earth because the water has dried up. Obviously, the dove has found a place to live. So, but when you read the psukim carefully, it really begs clarification. There's a lot of questions that arise when you read it with a critical eye. First of all, if you notice, the dove's mission is very clearly stated, right? Lirot hakalu hamayim me'al pnei ha'adama, right? The dove's purpose was to go out and see, did the water dry up? But when Noach sends out the raven, it doesn't say what the purpose is. We assume from the juxtaposition that the raven was doing the same thing, but remember, the raven is first. So why? You know, why is there nothing stated by the raven? And also, again, why did Noah specifically send out the raven? He had a lot of different, you know, animals to choose from. He had every species on his boat. So the Chizkuni suggests that why did Noah send specifically the raven? You know, the raven, because of its nature, the raven is a bird of prey, and its nature is to eat carcasses. So if the water subsided, the raven would have found a part of somebody's body, and, you know, on the shore, and it would have, you know, show Noah, you know, the water is dried up and therefore you can go out. But the raven doesn't even leave the vicinity of the teva. All the raven does is fly back and forth, back and forth, right around the teva. So Rashi there comments, Mukhan haya ha'orev l'shlichot acheret ba'asirah kishamim. B'yimei Eliyahu shene'amar v'ha'orvim meviim lo lechem u'basar. Okay? He says that the raven never left the vicinity of the teva, of the ark, because the raven didn't want to go on this mission. He wasn't prepared to do this mission. He refused. But, however, he was prepared to do another mission in the stopping of the rain, and that was in the time of Eliyahu HaNavi, later on, which obviously begs clarification. You know, what does that mean? I can't do it now. Sorry. In hundreds, actually thousands of years, I'm going to be busy with something else. So right now I can't take care of this, or I'm not willing to do this because I'm going to do this other mission. So that obviously the Gur Arye, the Maharal, he questions this Rashi and he says, why is it so? Why wouldn't the Oreb, the raven, be willing to do Noach's mission, Noach's shlichut? But yet when it comes to the shlichut of Eliyahu HaNavi in Malachim, then he would be prepared to be involved in that shlichut and that mission. So the Maharal answers that the raven by nature is a very cruel bird. And since the mission of Noach was somewhat of a positive mission, right? Noach's mission was, let's go out, let's see if the water subsided, and therefore we can once again re-inhabit the earth. The raven wasn't prepared to have any part in such a job. However, when it comes to the future, another story with stopping the rain, the story of Eliyahu HaNavi, he was prepared. Why? Because that was not necessarily a positive mission. What happened in the time of Eliyahu? The people were doing bad things. And Eliyahu, we'll get into a little bit of the story later, he said, nothing doing, I'm stopping the rain. You know, there's not going to be any more rain. Okay, but then, so then obviously what happened? There was a famine. There's no rain, there's no food. So the raven brought Eliyahu lechem and basar, bread and meat, in order to sustain Eliyahu. Because if Eliyahu was starving, then he probably would have stopped the famine. He would have davened for it to rain again. So therefore, he was willing to sustain Eliyahu because it meant that there would be a famine in the world. And because the raven by nature is such a cruel bird, he was willing to be involved to help out when it came to doing something negative, something, you know, maybe that reflected his cruelty. But in this situation, where it's a positive thing for the people to go out once again and re-inhabit the earth, he wasn't prepared to be involved in that. And therefore, he didn't even leave the vicinity of the boat. He just kind of flew back and forth and back and forth. In fact, the cruelty of the raven extends to his children. We say in Tehillim, Notein levheim alachma levnei orev asher yikru. We say Hashem gives food to the animals, to the raven's children that call out. Because according to Rashi, the raven doesn't even take care of its own children. It doesn't give its own children its own young food. And therefore, they cry out to Hashem. And this is the praise of Hashem, that Hashem takes care of the children of the raven, because the raven is not even willing or interested in taking care and feeding and nurturing its own children. So therefore, it was this cruelty of the raven that did not allow him to go on such a mission. But according to the Or HaChaim, the raven was not sent on any mission, but in fact, the raven was kicked out of the Teva. And it's for this reason, says the Or HaChaim, that there's no mention of any mission when it comes to the raven, right? But we said by the dove, it says, what was the reason he was sent out? He was sent out, l'rod hakalu hamayim me'al p'nei adama. But by the raven, it just says he was sent out. There's no mission attached to it, because there was no mission. And that's why Noach also, if you read the Pesukim, it says that Noach, when the dove came back, because there was nowhere for it to rest its foot, it says that Noach took the dove back into the Teva. But when the Orev flies around the Teva, there is no mention of Noach bringing the Orev back into the Teva, because again, the purpose was to expel the raven from the Teva. So what happens? The Gemara in Sanhedrin tells us that the raven broke the protocol. The protocol in the Teva was that cohabitation relations was forbidden, and the raven didn't care, didn't listen, and he cohabited with Mrs. Raven. And so therefore, Noach expelled him from the Teva. But the raven refuses to leave, and instead, he just flies around the Teva. And the Gemara tells us, actually, the raven argues with Noach, and he says to Noach, you know, my master Hashem hates me, and you hate me. Why? Why does Hashem hate me? Because Hashem said, of all the Torah animals, take 7 pairs. And of the other ones, just take 2. Right? And you, Noach, hate me because you can send out any bird you choose, but you choose to send me. And what would be if something happened to me? Then there would be one less species in the world. There would only be Mrs. Raven left, and then there would be no more ravens. Right? And on some level, perhaps the raven was right. Because the Medrash Rabbah tells us that Noach basically turned to the raven and he says, Ma tzorach l'olam bach? Lo l'achila, lo l'karban. Noach turns to the raven, he says, why does the world need you, raven? Can you be eaten for food? No. Can you be used as a karban? No. So seemingly he felt that there was no purpose. The Noach looks at the raven and he thinks he's devoid of purpose. Noach sees the raven as what? An instinctual creature. He's driven by lust. He doesn't have mercy for his children. He feasts on the spoils of death. He's unpredictable and unreliable. And so therefore, what place does such a creature have in the new world he's about to build? And so therefore, Noach is okay with just sending him out of the Teva. But Hashem, the creator of the world, obviously does not agree with Noach. And Hashem, the Medrash continues, Berchia b'shem Rav Abba Bar Kahana Amar. Amar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Hashem says to Noach, Kablu, she'asid ha'olam lehitztarech lo. Hashem says, don't get rid of the raven, take him back, because why? In the future, the world will need him. Amar lo, emasai. So Noach turns to Hashem and says, when? Amar lo, ad yivoshet hamayim me'al ha'aretz. When the water dries up from the land, atid sadek echad la'amod liyavesh et ha'olam va'ani matzricho lo. In the future, there's a tzaddik, namely Eliyahu, who's going to dry up the world from water. And I'm going to need this bird to bring Eliyahu lechem and basar, bread and meat, in the morning and in the evening to sustain Eliyahu. So basically, Hashem says to Noach, I have a plan for him in the future. There is some purpose to this raven. Now, Noach views this raven, the orev, as black, right? It's black and white. We have the orev, the black bird, and we have the dove. But Hashem says, no, it's orev. It's an erbuvia. There's a mixture. The raven is this mixture of good and bad, which is a new reality post Gan Eden. Right now, before, when everything was in Gan Eden, everything was black and white. It was totally clear, good, bad. But now, after the Chet of Adam, after the sin, everything kind of gets mixed together. It's no longer a black and white reality. It's no longer just good and evil. And the second incident with the raven, actually, with the story of Eliyahu, also, Eliyahu has, we find, a similar approach to Noach. He views, once again, the world in this black and white fashion. So let's go back to the story in Malachim Aleph of Eliyahu. So we have this king Ahav, who was not the greatest of kings. And in Eretz Yisrael at the time, Baal worship was widespread. Wherever you went, there were statues, there were altars to the Baal, to the Asherah, among other gods, right? Bnei Yisrael were basically on the verge of Gullus. And the Torah warned them that they would actually be sent to Gullus if they continued to serve Avodah Zarah. So Hashem sends Eliyahu to influence them to do teshuva. And according to the Medrash, Eliyahu has a conversation with the king Ahav. And basically, Ahav turns to Eliyahu and he says, those old curses, they're not going to come true. Nothing is going to happen. Come on, really? Let's call a spade a spade. This is all one big joke. He says, Moshe told us straight out, right? We say this every day in Shema. He shamru lachem pen yivtel levavchem v'sartem v'avadetem Elohim achirim v'shtachavisam lahem. You should be careful that if your heart goes astray and you start to do avodah zarah and you bow down to them, v'charaf Hashem b'chem, and Hashem's going to get angry, and what's he going to do? V'atzar es Hashemayim v'lo yematar v'adam alo titini v'la. What's Hashem going to do if you worship avodah zarah? He's going to close the sky. He's going to stop the rain, and there's not going to be any produce. And Ahav turns to him and he says, look, there are idols literally on every hilltop in Eretz Yisrael. And sometimes when I go to the Beis HaMikdash, it rains so hard, I come in soaked. So he says, of course, there's no truth to this. This whole thing is one big joke. He didn't believe at all in the truth of Torah. And not only him, obviously the Jewish people. He said, look, there's avodah zarah everywhere. We have more than enough rain. So see, what Moshe said absolutely is not coming true. So Eliyahu turns to Ahav and he says, That's it, Achav. There's not going to be any rain or anything unless I say so. And therefore, there was no more rain, there was no more water, and obviously a famine developed. And the ravens brought Eliyahu basar and lechem, bread and meat. So why did Hashem specifically send the ravens to bring Eliyahu the food, right? Perhaps he could have sent a pure bird. You know, what, there's a lot of birds that could have fulfilled this mission, yet Hashem chose the raven. And the reason was kind of to send a message to Eliyahu. It was to arouse Eliyahu to ask mercy for Klal Yisrael. It was to remind him of precisely the conversation that he had with Noach, the conversation between Hashem and Noach. And he said, you can't look at things in the world as black and white. You can't look at things as good and evil. Even cruel animals like the raven have a positive merit, even if it's hundreds of years down the line. In fact, the Zohar tells us, Asur lo la'adam lehit palel al harasha'im sheis taklumina olam, she'ilmale silku akarash barhulu terachmina olam, ksheya obed avodazara, lo ba'avram avinu la'olam, v'shifte Yisrael, lo hayu, v'ha melech David, u'melech ha'mashiach, v'ha torah lo nitna, v'kolo tam sadikim v'chasidim v'hanavim, lo hayu ba'olam. The Zohar tells us that it is usher for a person to daven that a Russia should be taken out of this world. Because what would have been if Terach, the Russia, was taken out of this world? We wouldn't have had Avram Avinu, right? We wouldn't have had the Shvatim. We wouldn't have had David HaMelech. We wouldn't have the Melech HaMashiach. The Torah wouldn't have been given. There wouldn't have been all those Tzaddikim and those Chassidim and those Nevi'im. They would have never come into this world. And so therefore, a person is not allowed to daven for a Russia to be taken out of this world. In fact, we know this, the similar concept, when Moshe went out to see his brothers in Mitzrayim, right? And he sees a Mitzri, and the Mitzri is hitting the Jew, right? The board is a Pasuk state. Vayifen ko v'ko, vayarki ein ish, vayachad a Mitzri. Literally translated as what? Moshe looks around. He looks here, he looks there. He sees there's no man, meaning there's no one watching. And he goes and he takes care of the Mitzri, he kills him. But Rashi explains, what does it mean, vayarki ein ish? He doesn't explain it just that he sees that there's no one watching, but rather, she'ein ish atid latzeit mimeno she'yit gayer. There is no one in the future that's going to come from this evil man that will convert, meaning there's nothing positive that will even come from this man in the future. Moshe understands that the world cannot be viewed as black and white, good and bad, and that even at a later point, good can come from something that seems to be bad. In fact, good can even have an effect on a seemingly bad creature from an earlier point in time. In fact, there's another story in Tanakh which grapples with this black and white approach, this approach of good and evil. And that's the story of Yonah and the city of Nineveh. In fact, it's very interesting because the story of Yonah is very much connected to these two stories that we just read. First of all, according to the Medrash, Yonah is the child that Eliyahu was Machayim Esam on. There was a widow, and Eliyahu went to stay by her, and her son died. And Eliyahu brought him back to life. And according to the Medrash, this child that Eliyahu brought back to life was in fact Yonah. Okay, so what happens in the story of Yonah? We know, Vayhi Dvar Hashem el Yonah ben Amitai Lemor. Hashem comes to Yonah and he says to him, Kum Leich al Nineveh, Hayir HaGdola. Get up and go to the city Nineveh, V'karayla, Ki El Tzara Atam Lefanai. Go out and call out to Nineveh, because Nineveh had done bad, and Hashem instructs Yonah to go and tell them that you should do Teshuvah, and you should change your ways so that your city will not be destroyed. But Yonah did not see the good in saving such people, and instead of listening to Hashem, what does he do? Vayakam Yonah levroch Tarshisha milifnei Hashem. Yonah gets up, and he decides, I'm going to run away. I don't want to be involved in this mission. Who are the people of Nineveh anyway, right? They're bad, and they come from bad. Why on earth would they be deserved to be saved? In fact, we go back to another pasuk in this week's Parsha, in Parshas Noach, and we say, Ubenecham, Cush, Mitzrayim, Usud, Uknan, I think that's what it says. The Cush, Yelades, Nimrod. So we have Noah's children, one of them is Ham, and Ham's descendant is Nimrod. Hu echel yo gibor baret, hu ya gibor tzayid lifnei Hashem. He was this mighty warrior. Al ken ye'emar k'nimrod gibor tzayid lifnei Hashem. Vatihi Rishis Mamlachto Bavel Va'arach Akkad. The Kalna Be'eretz in Ar Min Ha'aretz Hahu Yatsa Ashur Va'yivin Es Ninveh. Right. So basically, Cush's descendant was Nimrod, etc. And we go through this thing through Ashur to the point that we get to building the city of Ninveh. Wow. This is quite the lineage that Ninveh has. First, we start off with Cham. Cham is the cursed son of Noah, right? Not only that, but the same Gemara that told us that the Orev broke the protocol in the Teva, Cham also broke the protocol in the Teva, and Cham also cohabited. It said that he was gone after his Cham, his emotions, his desire. So Cham also was not exactly, you know, the best of people. And then you have Nimrod, the mighty Nimrod, the warrior, the hunter, right? And what happens? What does it mean? We loosely translate it as a warrior, as a hunter. But Rashi says, what is Gibor Tzayid? What does it mean? It means Tzad Da'atan Shel Brios Bifiv Umetan Limrod B'makom. He would basically trap people with his mouth, and he would convince them to go and rebel against HaKadosh Baruch Hu. In fact, Lahamrid Kol Olam Al HaKadosh Baruch Hu Ba'atzas Dor HaFlaga. What did he do? He tried to get the whole world to rebel against Hashem and Dor HaFlaga. So who was Ninveh's ancestor? Nimrod. He was the mastermind behind Dor HaFlaga. So Yonah sees these people as evil to the core, right? That obviously there's no point in saving them. We start with Cush and with Cham, and then we have Nimrod. Look at who Nimrod comes from. Why on earth are they even deserving of being saved, right? But obviously Hashem felt differently. He saw an element of good in them, and he wanted to give them a chance. What was the good that Hashem saw in Nineveh that he wanted to give them a chance? So we look a little later in our Parsha, Perek Yud Pasuk Yud Aleph, and the pasuk says, "Min ha'aretz ahu yatsa Ashur vayivin es Ninveh." Right, we're continuing on the lineage, and we say, literally, from this place, Ashur went out and he built Ninveh. The Rashi comments, "What does it mean? Umin ha'aretz ahu yatsa Ashur? Kevan shera'a Ashur es banav shom'in l'Nimrod." When Ashur saw that his children were listening to Nimrod, Umor din v'makom livnot hamigdal yatsa mitocham. When Asher saw that his children were being influenced by Nimrod and were going to join in this rebellion against HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he packed up his family and he left. And he moved away to a city that we call Ninveh. And that is actually how Ashur founded Ninveh. So there was some sort of good hidden and mixed in into Ninveh. And this is where Hashem disagrees with Yonah, where he disagrees with Eliyahu, and where he disagrees with Noach. Hashem says to Noach, "Noach, we're in a post-Gan Eden reality. Things are not black and white. They're not good and evil. But rather, there's some sort of mixture. There's an Orev, there's an Erbuvia." And so, Hashem sends Noach the symbol of the Keshes, the rainbow. The rainbow is not black and white, but rather, it's a spectrum of colors. What is a rainbow? A rainbow is a refraction of white light, meaning every color of the rainbow has a piece of this white light in it. Similarly, every person has a piece of good in them, and it's incumbent upon us to look for it. We cannot easily dismiss anyone, but we have to actually search out the good. Maybe it's something in the past, or it's something that we're going to wait to see in the future. But this is how Hashem tells Noach to view the new world, and to use this vision in building this new reality. This is that we can't look at things as cookie cut, black, white, good, bad. But when we look at people around us, and we look at those types of things, we have to realize that there's gray, that there's a spectrum of colors. And that's how we have to approach the people around us. But there is one place that there is no room for the raven, and the character of the raven, namely its cruelty, its being driven by lust, being unpredictable, unreliable, etc. The Gemara in Moed Katan, Tes Amud Aleph, says that what were the finishing touches of the Beis HaMikdash? The finishing touches of the Beis HaMikdash were Amakalia Orev, were these arm-like spikes which destroy the ravens. Basically, there were these sharpened spikes that were placed on top of the Beit HaMikdash to keep the ravens away, because otherwise maybe they would have been attracted to the smell of the roasting flesh of the sacrifices. And so obviously, you know, the role of the spikes as the finishing touch of the construction shows that there must have been some level of importance. If that's the last thing, that's the final piece of the Beit HaMikdash, obviously it shows that there's some level of importance in these spikes. But it seems like it's essentially superfluous. Why? What need would they have for this on them, that any raven would actually come and sit on top of the Beit HaMikdash? We know there were tons of nisim in the Beit HaMikdash, so much so that no fly was attracted to the meat of the karbanos. There were no flies, and we're worried about the ravens. So the purpose of the Beit HaMikdash is to affect the relationship between Hashem and Bnei Yisrael. Obviously, the Beit HaMikdash represents the relationship between us and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And in that place, in the place of the relationship between Bnei Yisrael and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, there's no place for a raven. When we create a relationship with Hashem, there's no room for cruelty. There's no room for selfishness or following our own urges, lust, desires, etc. And so therefore, it's the raven that has to be kept out of the Beis HaMikdash, a place where we create a relationship with Hashem. Because raven-like qualities do not allow us to develop and to create and to foster a relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. In fact, the same idea is echoed in next week's Parsha. Hashem tells Avraham that his descendants are going to inherit Eretz Yisrael. And Avraham asks Hashem, he says, "Bama'ida ki ershena." How am I going to know that I'm going to inherit Eretz Yisrael? So Hashem tells him, answers with the bris bein habsarim, right? Hashem tells Avram to take 11 animals, 9 of which he cuts in half, and he seals this covenant, this bris with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the Medrash comments that the animal parts were a symbolic answer to Avram Avinu's question. Hashem said to Avram, how do you know that you're going to merit Eretz Yisrael? He says you're going to merit the land by virtue of the future karbanos that you are going to bring in the Beis HaMikdash. And what happens in the middle? Vayered ha'et al habgarim vayeshev osam Avraham. Birds of prey descended on the carcasses of the animals, and Avraham chased them away. Once again showing us that birds of prey, that's the generic term, but a bird of prey is a raven, and the raven-like qualities have no place in a relationship between us and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And so we learn from the story with the raven that we cannot be quick to dismiss or to judge others. People are not black and white, but rather it's a rainbow. And it's incumbent upon ourselves to look for the good in them. Hashem created the raven with a purpose, even if we don't see it. And we can't look around the world and say good, bad, and dismiss people, because in each and every person there's that piece of white refracted light. There is some sort of good, even if we don't see it now, but there is some sort of purpose to each and every person in the world. But when it comes to the raven within ourselves, the raven-like qualities and characteristics that we may possess to various degrees, cruelty, selfishness, lust, going after our own desires, there's no place for that. And that is the time that we actually have to chase the raven away. Like we didn't allow it in the Beis HaMikdash, and Avram chased it away from his karban, from his covenant with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Or perhaps we must place barricades from it, allowing it to interfere with our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu.